Hello, world, and welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut. You have your program director and host, James J. Maloff, here. I am joined by my partner in sound, our head of production, Seth Habhager.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, James. I'm so pleased to be here. And, oh, wait, you're not interviewing me. Oh, darn.
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry, Seth. Did you think I was interviewing you today?
I thought,
I apologize, man. I should have been more clear about my notes.
Oh, is that why there's this other person in the room?
Yeah,
oh,
okay. I wanted to introduce him to you. I was going to get around to that.
Okay.
Joel Goodness is here with us today. And Joel, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Joel, for those that may not know, because your career, your work in this town and just in general in entertainment is very well known to me and many people in this area. But for those that don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, that you're an actor, a dancer, these things.
All right. Yep. I started out dancing, high school musicals, of course, at Assumption High School. And then I moved to Stevens Point. I was actually at UW-Viterbo College. I was majoring in biology pre-med to become a doctor.
Really?
Yeah. And
oh, I didn't
my
know that.
Yes. And so my parents were so excited about that. They're finally going to get a doctor in the house, so to speak. And so my first semester of college was for biology pre-med. And then I had been taking dance classes through that summer. My high school dance teacher, Christine Braddock, at the time, she had given us guys, some of us guys, a chance to get lessons by doing her senior recital for the, 'cause they didn't have enough guys. They were doing the disco Last Dance, of course.
Oh, nice.
With Barbra Streisand and Donna Summer. Yeah. And for that, you kind of need guys. And
oh,
so
yeah.
They didn't have guys. So they asked a bunch of us guys if we would want to, in exchange for free dance classes, to do this. So we said, sure.
Wow.
So Kurt Hoyer, our old chief
of
police,
he
was one of them. Who else can I tell you? Tony Melky, Mike Williamson. I'm trying to think who else was in it. Tim Cavanaugh and myself. We did that. So we did the production for their senior class recital. And then I took dance classes that summer. So the whole summer I was taking tap classes, and that fall with Viterbo College, I had that all set up. But I was majoring in biology pre-med. So then I kind of took some classes during that summer in Stevens Point, UW Stevens Point, and the professor there, James Moore, who had extensive Broadway background with West Side Story and working with Jerome Robbins, etc. He had said, hey, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm going to school for biology pre-med. And he said, if you change your mind, you've got such great potential. You know, we'd love to have you here. So I went, okay.
Isn't that how it always starts?
Yeah, put it back in my mind. Went to college in La Crosse, and that first semester. So I auditioned actually for a show, You Can't Take It With You, very funny show.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only non-major to get a part in this show.
Wow.
So it was kind of like, well, okay, this is kind of another little interesting tidbit. And then they had asked me to do the Nutcracker at Viterbo. So I was in rehearsals for that. And then I was having these dreams. I was having these dreams that I was flying, but I was getting zapped by the light, by the wires. And so every night it was a reoccurring dream. I'd fly.
Wow.
I'd try to fly. I couldn't get going. And I'd always was getting zapped by the wires. And so Christine, who had become a good friend of mine, she had said, well, you know, maybe this is a sign telling you that maybe you're not doing what you should be doing. And so I changed my degree second semester. I went to Stevens Point. And switched to theater, dance. My parents were livid. They were not happy at all. And I said, Mom, Dad, don't worry. Someday I will play a doctor on TV.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. And so I did.
I'm sure that really mollified them, right?
Well, actually, they were really upset at first. But I'll tell you this. They have been my biggest fans ever since.
Nice.
They had been to every show that I've ever done. They were there when I was on Broadway opening. They were on my cruise ships. I brought them on cruise ships, and they became my biggest fans. And so I did play a doctor on several times, several soaps, and that's my claim to fame as where I started. Stevens Point, again, then I did theater, dance there. I was in a lot of different shows. And then during the summer, I wanted to get out and do other things. And so I was auditioning for theme parks in Chicago. At the time, it was Great America theme parks, now where Six Flags is.
Yeah.
And so I auditioned for that, and I got a job for that summer. And then I went back to college, did another two semesters. And then that summer, I took off to do summer stock. I auditioned for a couple different shows, and then I got that going. And then I received a scholarship for a dance school in Chicago. So talk about another crazy, scary thing. Yeah. Here I am. I have a scholarship for a full scholarship to a dance school in Chicago, and I am getting on a bus. My mother is freaking out. She is so nervous.
How old?
What are you going to do? I was 19.
Okay.
Yeah, 19, 20. And here I am. All I had was my suitcase, my dance clothes. I had packed a can of soup, a little saucepan, and a spoon. And that was it. And she's oh my God, she was so scared. And I had very little money. I stayed in the YMCA down in Chicago. They have these YMCAs where you can rent a room. And I stayed there for the first two nights. And then the second two nights, I stayed at a couple guys that I'd met at the dance studio. They put me up for a couple nights. And then the fifth night, this really great guy, Jimmy Locus, had put me up for the last night. And he was one of the dance members for the company. And so he put me up. And then I was able to find a place after that, and everything worked out. I got a day job. I was doing working at this Blimpie's sub shop and making Subway sandwiches.
Gosh. Blimpie's. I thought about that.
Yeah. Little plug for Blimpie's.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
And then I was working for a marketing research company. So I was doing interviews all over the world for these different companies. And so I was able to call my mom every day on my time off and talk with her. But I was taking dance classes. I was getting more and more into the dance world. And I had Gus Giordano School of Dance. That's where I started. And they were a really great staple for dance in the Midwest in that era. And so I studied. I worked really hard. Peg Giordano, she was married to Gus, and she would hire me or hire a bunch of us guys for these bridal shows that they would do at the Marriott Lincolnshire. So we would do the modeling of the tuxedos with the women in their dresses, and then we would also do a little dance number. And so a lot of the guys, the company guys, would do this, and this is where, you know, we'd make some extra monies on the side. So I did that for a while, and then I got a call again to go back to theme parks for the second summer, and I did that, and I did two shows, Evolution of Rock, and then Salute to the Stars at Great America, and they were great. We would do seven, well, actually, no, we would do 5 to 6 shows a day, so you talk about building endurance. We were talking about what it takes.
Yeah.
This literally trained you to be consistent in every show, because you had to be top-notch, ready to go. 45-minute show, it started, and the music would go, and it was on track, and it would not stop until the end. And so all these musical vignettes, you went from the Evolution of Rock we did, you know, from the beginning of Chuck Berry to Tutti Frutti, Little Richard, and then all the way into the Beatles, into the contemporary music of the time. So they were quick, fast little vignettes of music, and you come out, you have to costume changes, and then you're dancing, and then you're trying to get into the next costume because you just did 3 shows before that, and the clothes are sweaty and wet. Yeah. Yeah. And so you're trying to put on wet clothes to get on, and there's wigs. We did a 60s medley, and we had these long wigs, and so we were dancing in that. And so this was where I built my my consistency to sustain for those shows, because we would do, again, 5 or 6 shows a day, and then we'd have one day off, and then or 1 or 2 days off, whatever it was at the time. So that was tied me up to my second year, I believe, of college, finished that. And then I auditioned for cruise ships during that time. And then they called me, and they had somebody had left the company due to whatever the situation was. And so then, instead of going back to college for my second year, I forget now which one it was, I went on cruise ships, and I did a 6-month cruise ship, which was incredible to leave Wisconsin for the winter to go down to work on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. So that was what was incredible. I had a great group of people to work with, and it was just so much fun to be in the Caribbean, getting paid, and to be on a cruise ship during the 80s.
Oh my God,
which was insane. And I would tell you something, but I can't say it on air.
Yeah. Off air. We'll hear those stories. Seth and I want them off.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I think we can all use our imaginations on that one. Yes.
From stage to soaps, the Academy Awards to deep space, Joel, you have done so much in your career, and it's still going. I don't want to make it sound like it's wrapped up or something like that. Joel's still a young, healthy, good looking man. Got plenty of work left in him.
Thank you.
But before we get to some of those bigger accomplishments and some of those things there, you're explaining to us the origin story. You're giving us the grind and the work that it took to get to those places. During those moments, during those times, you're kind of the idea of doing this is new to you relatively. You mentioned you were going to go to school for this. You change your stuff, you know, in the middle of the school year to go to a different direction. So as you're on that cruise ship, as you're experiencing these, and I imagine some culture shock in being in a completely different scenario and everything, are there moments where you're like, God, this is what I get to do? And then are there also moments like, oh my God, I miss my home?
Like, yeah, there were times we were on the cruise ship. So we did two shows a week. We did two shows on Mondays and two shows on Fridays. And those were usually when the ship was at sea. Most of the time we were at port every night, every day, every night we'd go into the next port and then take off that afternoon or evening and then go into the next port that night. But Mondays and Fridays were always the nights, were the days at sea where we were crossing the Gulf of Mexico. And if you've ever crossed the Gulf of Mexico going opposite of where it's going, it's a lot of turbulence. Mm. So you're going against the Gulf stream. And so here is a cruise ship. You know, I don't know how big cruise ships are these days, but even this size, it had a lot of turbulence crossing that Gulf Stream. So we were doing two shows, and then, you know, you try to do a turn, double turn, and of course you get the ship rocking, and so you don't really get that chance often. But for the most part, we did it. There were some times when it was so rough, they had to, we had to shut things down just because it was so rough. But there were days, I loved being there. I loved the food, of course, on the cruise ships.
Yeah.
The women would always have to, we'd have to get weighed in each week because we had to keep a certain weight, show weight.
Wow.
But it was mostly because of the salt water and all that would retain. But we, you know, we had to keep our shape. We had to work out. And so when you're working Monday and Friday, just those 2 days, you have most of the rest of the week off to do whatever you wanted. So we were able to go and see the sights, Chichen Itza, Tulum, Xel-Há, Mexico, Ocho Rios, Jamaica, the Dunn Rivers Falls, and really have a great time. Sailboard, whatever the case was, parasailing, scuba diving, snorkeling. So we were able to do all that. And that was exciting. The times that I would miss it is when we were sitting watching the movie for the 14th, 15th time because they would have the same movie because it was a whole new group of people every week.
Right,
but the movie was always the same. And so very rarely would they switch that up. So on those sea days where I got a lot of reading done, a lot of Dean Koontz or whatever the books were at the time.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of card playing. And those times were kind of boring and tedious, but we got through it by sitting in the sun the next day.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Yep.
When those days wrap up, is it around that time that you start thinking about, I kind of want to pursue this. I kind of want to continue to be an entertainer. What was your next step as far as getting an agent, as far as like reaching out, like where do I find work?
Right. So when you're doing a show, you're constantly thinking about the next show after that because it only has a shelf life of, 3 to 6 months, depending upon what you're doing. And so I was always thinking about what I'm going to do next after that. Before I had left to go to the cruise ships, I had auditioned for a dinner theater circuit, and they had called me. So I did a show right out of college then. So I did two contracts per year. So that was six month contracts. And then I went back to college and did another year. And then they called me back to do another 2 years, another year of cruise ships. So that I signed on for another year. And then I finally came back and graduated college. It took me 2 years out, but I did it in 4 years, but I did it 2 years later. And so then I was auditioning for other things, dinner theaters. I was thinking about New York. My whole goal was to get to New York, to be on Broadway. That was what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And so that was my goal. I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to take off and get out of there. But mom and dad said, no, at least get a degree just so you have something to fall back on.
Sure.
And I went, sure, that's going to help really well when I'm, you know, auditioning, because they don't care whether you have a degree or not.
They care
if you're talented and if you fit the bill and you look like what we're looking for. So that's really what it was all about. And I knew that, but at the same time, I had to appease mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to have that degree to fall back on. And so I did. I graduated in 1986. And and then I took off. I had a show that I was doing in Milwaukee at the Pabst Theater. Mm-hmm. And this was through a director. My two of my teachers were actually doing the show as well, so it was kind of fun to work with them. And we did that. It was called Sweat. It was an original musical, 1980s kind of show. Mm-hmm. And so we did that at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee. And then I had auditioned for this dinner theater down in Louisville, Kentucky. And they, when I was driving back after the show closed, I drove back to Wisconsin Rapids from Milwaukee. And as I was driving, I got a call from Derby Dinner Playhouse to come in and do two shows. They booked me for two shows. So I said, great. So I packed my things up in the car. Mom and Dad, we'll see you later. And then took off again. And there I had, you know, a contract as well. And I was getting paid with that as well as the show before that. And so I had been working throughout college. I was showing, you know, my parents, they saw that I was working. I was getting jobs. I was getting paid for everything I did. I did choreography when I was in college to pay for some college bills. I would do that for like the local high schools or different swing choirs in the areas. I would choreograph for them. So those were the things that I was doing on the side in between auditioning for jobs as well as doing school college shows. So my mind, my focus was always on New York, or always was on films. I wanted to be an actor on television or Broadway. And so that's kind of was my goal for that.
Did you get noticed for choreography before the acting, or vice versa?
Well, choreography, I won an award for college for best new choreographer at the time. Mm-hmm. This is for Stevens Point, but so it wasn't a you know, kind of go up. Right. It's an award.
I mean, an award.
At least I was being recognized by the other college teachers and things that I was doing some good things, and that's what was exciting about that. Did I really think I was going to be a choreographer? No, I didn't have any goals for that. I really wanted to perform, and that's kind of where I was set with that. When I left to do dinner theater, I did two shows, but what was kind of funny about this is I never worried about it, but it always kind of fell in my lap, where I would go down, I had two contracts to do, two shows, and before the shows were over with, Jean Ann Ryan, where I went to work on for cruise ships, she called me back and said, hey, can you come back and do another cruise? You know, somebody left and we need a replacement. So I said, sure. So I literally went from there to go back on cruise ships again for another 6 months. Hmm. She had then booked me for a show at the Sheraton Bell Harbor in Florida. So it was a land show. It was like a Las Vegas Review. And they had a comedian, they had a singer, they had a magician, and then they had Kurt Thomas. If you remember him, he won a gold medal for gymnastics. And he was doing his show with Gymnastics America, his company. Hmm. So that was the show. And it was three of us guy dancers, and they had an adagio partner dancer from France, from the Moulin Rouge. Mm-hmm. And so they had a beautiful adagio team. And then we did our show. And so it was a great little 6-month contract. While I was there, that's when I started to audition in between during the day. Mm. Now I could get out and go to my agents. I could go do commercials. I could, because now I was on land and I was in an area where I could do a lot of that. Even in Louisville, I had an agent that I worked through. I did some different commercial TV things there. But Florida, because it's a right to work state, there's no union. So you can do anything as far as you can do beer commercials and do all that stuff with as many different agents. So I wasn't a set agents, but you could do a lot of the different things. So I had about 6 agents that would call me up and say, hey, can you do this, this, and that?
Yeah.
And I would say, alrighty, thanks, but I already booked with this one. And so we had to keep it that way. But it was very professional. I got paid, and I did some crazy fun stuff down there. I did 3 beer commercials, 3 or 4. And I was a hand model for... I think it was for Heineken beer, and I did Labatt's beer, I did Polar beer, Lots of different fun Canadian beers.
Side note, did they make you shave your hand for it? I did a little hand modeling, and they made me shave my hands, and now I've got to keep up on it, otherwise it just grows back like Wolfman. Like, I get the weirdest thing. I don't know if it's just Jew hair or what it is, but my hair just grows like that, I guess. It's the weirdest thing.
Maybe as we're getting older, of course, hair grows. Yeah, hair grows in places that we don't want.
All these places.
So it is, at that time, I probably didn't have hair on my hands. I wasn't too worried about.
Well, on that note, before we get into some of the other bigger roles that you got into, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we'll more with Joel Goodness here on Director's Cut.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you being here with us, Seth and James, and we are talking with Joel Goodness as part of our actor sessions. And this is something we're going to do throughout the run of the show here, where every once in a while we're going to have a chance to have an actor come in, talk with us about the process of what is acting. And I'm not talking about necessarily getting into a role and all those things. I want to talk about what it is to be an actor day in, day out, the grind of it.
An actual professional person who earns their living that way, right?
Yeah. And giving young artists out there an idea, window mm-hmm. into this world. I think, Joel, I don't know if you'd agree or not, but I know for me, when I first got into the industry, I came in with no playbook. I had no idea what I was doing. And I came in even, a decade or so later than you and everything. And even where you would think there'd be more opportunities, more information, not really. It was still kind of... And so I talk to young actors now about these things, and I find... the same problem. There's no blueprint. They graduate from Second City or from some school, and they're kind of like, well, there you go, off into the wilderness, mm-hmm. figure it out and everything.
Right.
I think that one of the things we can do with this is not only helping them bridge that gap from graduation to the job, but understanding what this process is like. For every big name that you see and that you know that's a household name and everything, there are thousands and thousands of great actors that are doing the grind, working from bit to bit, from part to part, and loving it. Mm-hmm. I think that some people get lost in the idea of what it is to be an actor, and that it means, well, my name is the top of the headline and that kind of thing.
It depends upon your goals and things. Yep.
Yeah. For a lot of us, it's so much about, I just want to work. Yep. I just love acting. I want to continue to get in. And if I can make a living at doing this, all the better. It's not just the American dream. It's the human dream to make a living doing what you love to do.
The Beatles said it best. Life is what happens while you're busy making plans.
So true.
So if you can do that, if you can do the business, while you're pursuing the business, that's the goal. And for me, I went to college, I had a degree, but after that, they don't really tell you what to do with that degree or how to go about it. So Stevens Point, though, right now, I know they have a great program for musical theater. They're accredited. Mm-hmm. They actually have a workshop, showcase type of thing where they will take the kids to New York. They will present them. They have worked on scenes. They have worked on monologues. They've worked on songs. They have their pictures and resumes ready to go.
Awesome.
And then they go to New York for a time, go there for a week, set up with different agents, and then the agents come in, and if there's somebody there, they do that. I didn't have that back then, and so I had to do it myself. And all I did is, I had a friend that said, hey, you want to get a bread and butter job? Mm-hmm. And have you ever cater waitered? And I went, nope. Well, you tell them, here's a friend. I want you to call this person. And then tell him, yes, you have English service and French service as far as catering goes. And I went, okay, great. Cruise director, Bruce Chafkin, he's no longer with us. He had gained some weight, I should say. And so he was not fitting into his tuxedos. Mm. And so I got a beautiful Adolfo tuxedo. And this was really nice. Mm. So I took that tuxedo to New York when I went. After I finished my shows in Louisville, Kentucky, they called me back to go do two more shows there after cruise ships. And after that review show in Florida, I went back to do two more shows. And then a buddy of mine and I said, let's go to New York. And so we did. He flew up the week before. I rented a truck. We got his stuff loaded, my stuff loaded from Louisville. We drove up to Wisconsin here, got the things out of my parents' basement. And then we literally took off to New York. We had an apartment on the Upper East Side. I had never been. I'd been there maybe about 2 or 3 years prior and had gone up there just to see friends from college, but I hadn't done it since. So we got the apartment, Upper East Side. It was October. I know it was October 31st because we were getting ready to go in for a November 1st lease. Mm. And so we got there October 31st. People were walking around in costumes, and we literally had to lock the truck. We parked down front. It was a 5-floor walk-up.
Nice.
We were on the 5th floor.
Of course you were.
It always happens that way.
So we would take one piece at a time. It took us the whole day to unload that truck.
I'll bet.
And then I think we were finished at maybe about 1, 2 in the morning, and we were exhausted. We took the truck down to a really seedy part of the town, and there were people walking the streets down there, and so we we tried to get a cab back up north, and then we went to a all-night coffee shop, had something to eat, and then we went to bed. And that was it. It was crazy. The next day, I was up and running. I called this guy that I got the phone number through a friend. He asked if I ever did a French service catering, and I said, of course I did. Of course. Duh. Of course.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. My mom taught me that. God.
And Wisconsin. Did you know that?
Yeah. And so he says, do you have a tuxedo? I said, yeah. Not, I have the Adolfo tuxedo. And so I got booked that night. We was at the Puck building for a wedding. I went down there. I had not a clue what I was doing, and I just made it happen.
Improvised.
I did. And after that, he said, hey, I want to book you for this, this, and that. I literally had the weeks booked up. From then on, I was waiting, catering. We were making $75 for 3 to 5 hours, which was good money back then.
Oh, yeah.
And then I, throughout that time, had gotten in with 13 other catering companies then, and they were using me for a captain. And so now my career as a caterer waiterer took off really well. I was working at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It was fun. Friday nights, we would do serving wines and drinks for the patrons, and we would do the membership drives. And so I was able to see the Museum of Natural History, the Museum of Natural Art, all these different beautiful places that we don't ever get into to cater and do these events. We would do luncheons. Steve Martin, the comedian Steve Martin, not Steve Martin, Stevens Point, but
the other Steve Martin.
The other Steve Martin. Wonderful. Yeah, was also very wonderful.
Yes, he is.
He would come to lunches. There would be maybe 15, 20 people at this luncheon, and he would be there because he was donating some of his collection or show letting them use it. Major people. I would work with another catering company where we would do private parties up in Art Garfunkel's place, our home, up at the Dakota. Mm. And again, a gorgeous place. Some of these socialites, we never even get close to, we did these great parties for, and it was just an incredible experience.
Being around a lot of that, did that help you get more comfortable not only in the city but on the stage when you would eventually get on stage in New York?
I think, it did, because you're using your skills to converse with not only your fellow workers but also with all these people that you had to have that sense of I guess, professionalism, where you are able to speak and talk at the same time and do your job, and still you weren't a waiter. You were. I'd never looked at myself as a waiter. I looked at myself as an actor who was doing this for making money, and so that's where it was always. Other guys that were doing the same thing, you know, we were always networking and doing different things to keep it going. They would tell me, you know, there's this audition the next day. So I had my jobs at night, and then I looked at the backstage with the newspaper, which was the actor's Bible, and they would have all the different auditions on the paper. So I literally had it all mapped out. I'd, you know, work at night and then go to auditions, 2 or 3 auditions. And because we lived on the 5th floor, you made sure that you had everything with you when you went out that day, or because you did not want to go back up. I kept really fit from doing that.
That helped. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when you go home at night, you made sure you had everything that you needed for the next day. But it really kept me motivated, because I was nonstop thinking about new Broadway all the time. I was thinking, you know, what I had to do. I would have three auditions in one day, and then I had a catering gig right after that. So I had to make sure I took everything with me, made sure I had a place to shower, whatever I needed to do that, mm-hmm. so that I could go to work the next that night. And then I had it all booked up the next the whole week. I would then book a job, and then I would take mm-hmm. off and go for 3 months. I would do whatever it was, filming of step aerobics back in the day, those step aerobics when they yeah, first came yeah. out. I did all those videos. So,
right on.
Yeah, it was great. Broadway, off-Broadway, I did two shows off-Broadway. They were small little shows that we did at just the local theaters, and that kind of built me up towards Broadway. I would literally take off and do like the first five years of New York, I was taken off to do regional theaters, dinner yeah. theaters, summer stock. And that's where I was getting my training. Mm-hmm. I got my equity card from doing summer stock. I did three shows one summer. And I worked with some great choreographers that would later on become bigger people and in the business. And that was what was exciting about that.
You do the off-Broadway, and it builds up, and you eventually get to do the thing that you were talking about a number of times here about the dream of getting on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And you go to Broadway, and you originate the role of Harry in the five-year smash hit run of Crazy for You.
Correct.
From 92 to 96. Mm-hmm. The audition, getting the part, can bring us back to that moment and what that run was like. Because it's one of my dreams is not
I
so much...
I still get goosebumps right now.
I can see it. And you're giving... It's contagious. You're actually giving it to me here. I'm actually feeling a little of that. It's not just a dream, I imagine, accomplished. Yeah. But then you're in the dream. You're in the middle of it and feeling it.
Well, I will tell you this. I was doing production of Camelot, and we were... There's a second production that I had done, and we had just finished a production in North Carolina, and we were doing another production with another director, rehearsing at the Minskoff Studios, Midtown, to do Camelot again, and everyone was saying, "Hey, there's this new show coming up. It's called Girl Crazy. We're based on Girl Crazy, the movie, and they're looking for guys and girls, of course." Mm-hmm. And so Jack Allison, who's a sweet, sweet man, he said, "Okay, whoever we had rehearsals that day," and he said, "Well, let's schedule rehearsals, you know, the next day so that you all can go to this audition." And so a bunch of us did, and two of the guys, got called back, and so we. So a week later, we get a callback. And so we had to go back to callbacks. And there they have. So if you can't imagine, when a new show comes out, everybody and their brother are looking to audition for this.
Well, sure,
whether they're on Broadway now doing a show where they're doing Cats and they've been doing it for years and or whatever the show was, they've been doing it. So now they have a whole new show. And this is they're looking for. This is with Susan Stroman. It was her first show. Mm. It was with the Gershwins. So it was their music, but it was to a brand new book. Ken Ludwig, who wrote the book, who we've done tons of comedies here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was the writer. And so here we are at this audition, and there's about 300 to 500 guys that audition for this role. And so when you're thinking about the competition, and then girls, there's double that.
Yes.
Because there's more girls than guys. So here you have these guys, and we're auditioning, and we're dancing through it. And then we, at the very end, we have to sing. And because I had to take off to go back to rehearsals or something, I had to leave early. So Susan asked me to go and vocalize with this pianist. So we went in their room, and I did all the vocals and everything. And then I had to take off, and I thought, oh, God. Mm. I couldn't stay for the rest of it, so I know I'm going to get axed because now I have no chance. Mm-hmm. Well, sure enough, the following week, we were opening in Beverly, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, doing Camelot at the... Theater in the Round and Beverly, Massachusetts. And so I get a call, and they want us back for callbacks. Well, we were opening that night. And so I said, Jack, can we go? So two of us guys. So they said, okay, we'll let you go. And so we drove in to New York City, went to the callbacks, and here they have two sets of guys. They have 10 here, 10 here, and we're one of the two groups. And then they're moving us around, and they have us sing and dance again, and they're moving us around some more, and then they leave the two groups alone, and they say, thank you very much. And that was it. And here we are going, oh, my God, please stop with this. Yeah. You're killing me.
Just give me an answer.
Yeah, so we went back to Boston. We opened Camelot that night. I get a call that night after the show from Michael Ockrent, the director. He says, we'd like you to be part of the cast for Crazy for You. And I went, oh, my God. So it was emotional, mm-hmm. and I cried. And then I hung up with him, and then I called my mom and dad, and I told them that. Yeah. So it was
first thing you got to do. First thing.
Yep. Yeah. It was cool because they were very excited, and they knew that this was my dream. So it was kind of great. And I'm a little verklempt right now.
Understandable.
It's a dream come true.
But and I value this so very much, this moment right now, because this is what I want the other young entertainers, not just actors, not just writers, but people that are looking to get into a field and they're just starting and they're discouraged or they're not sure if they want to keep going at it and everything. This is the reason you keep fighting.
Yep. It's perseverance. It's tenacity. It's doing it, no matter what. You take whatever job you can get. You have to be able to sing, you have to be able to dance, and you have to be able to act. And if you can do all three very well, you will work constantly and consistently in the field. If you are just an actor and you can only act, then you are limiting yourself if you can't sing and dance. And that is where I was able to parlay and do a lot of different things. I was able to do those dance auditions, those crazy Cutler men's clothing industrials where we had to dance in the clothing line, and we did tons of those, and we did tons of, you know, again, different commercials, things like that. The step aerobics, you have to be active to do that. Yeah. And so those things, I was a Roman centurion for some vitamin company, like Centrum, the vitamin.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
So I was wearing a toga at one thing. And so I did that. I did a cop for another magazine, and I did AT&T. I did this commercial on billboards where they digitally altered my mouth and made me a sergeant. And they had the words through my mouth. And I think I have that poster at my house still.
That's great. That's awesome.
So yeah, it was great. So we opened the show of Camelot, and here I am already booked to start rehearsals for a Broadway show after I finished the show. And that's what was exciting. It was like, it very rarely happens like that. And so we started rehearsals, 890 Studios down in the Village, and then we went through, excuse me, that summer. We did 8 weeks of rehearsals. I think I want to say six months of rehearsals where here is Ken Ludwig, the writer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He is sitting there with Mike Ockrent, the director who did On Your Toes. He did a bunch of other big shows. And Susan Stroman, this is her first show. Wow. And so here we had Jodie Benson. She was the voice of The Little Mermaid. We had Harry Groener, who was on Dear John TV shows. Yeah. He also is the principal for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He did all that.
Oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's Harry Groener, very well known. He started out in Cats, original show of Cats. He did a couple other shows. Huh. And then this was his starring format, and also Jodie's was the two leads. So we had Beth Level, who has won Tonys for The Drowsy Chaperone, and she's done Devil Wears Prada, and she's done...
I didn't know
tons,
she did that.
Yeah, they opened in Chicago. She's done a slew of things. She did Prom, the musical. And so she's well-known. She wasn't at the time, but now she's a well-known Broadway star. And she was our Tess. And so we had Bruce Adler. He was our vaudevillian kind of character, the Ziegler. Ziegfeld was the character, but they did it, Ziegfeld. I forget now the name of it. But he was well-known. We had a couple of other guys. Jane Cannell, she was the original Gooch in...
sounds familiar.
Original Gooch in, Mame. Mame.
Oh, Mame. Oh, okay.
So Carol Burnett, she had worked with Carol Burnett, and she left later on to do another show with Ken Ludwig, did as well. So we got to go see that one. But to work with these people, to have these people there every day, to change lines. You know, we would do the run through, and then Ken would come back and say, "Here, say this, do this." And Mike said, "Okay, we need to have you do this." And so it was great to be in that realm of invention or change. Yes, yeah. That's what was great. So we opened in Washington D.C. In the fall, and we were running there for 8 weeks right before Christmas. And I met four presidents now. I've met tons of celebrities, and it's been a whirlwind tour, trip extravaganza as far as my life has gone, because there's so many celebrities, so many different things that have happened. But what was great about Washington D.C. was we had this great number called by Strauss. It was a waltz by Strauss. Mm. And then we had these gorgeous costumes, hussar costumes that Willie Ivy Long had designed. And he's another Broadway legend for costuming. And he had designed these gorgeous costumes. The women, the guys, we were all wearing these really cool hussar boots with tap boots that had these huge lips on them that went up to our knees. And we were dancing in this. And the number didn't work. So they spent all this money on all these costumes, and the number wasn't working.
Oh, no. Oof.
So they went, you know what? We made a decision. We have to change this out. So we're going to come back tomorrow morning. We're going to learn a new number, and then we're going to put it back in that night. So now you think about it. You've been running this show. You've been doing this number. You have all these different entrances where you usually go to, and now all of a sudden we had to learn a new number that day and put it in that night. And we did, and it was a big hit. It was the big stiff upper lip number with the where we load up the chairs and they do the flags and the very Les Miserables.
That was the
number that was replaced. Whoa. Yeah.
So goodness.
Yeah. And so we tap danced on the table. We did all these different things, and it was a great, great number. And Susan, I mean, I'm sure she had these other numbers in the back of her mind that she had been working on, but to have her pull it out and have it learned and taught it that day, and then we put it in that night. Was impressive.
Incredibly. By everybody.
That's what you do. Impressive. Yeah, you're getting paid to do it, and that's where it is. You have to be ready to go at a moment's notice, and you do. And
desperation is the mother of invention, if you ask me.
Always is. Always is.
Especially in theater.
Yep. And so we opened on Broadway on February 19th. We already had talk of Tony Awards before we even came back to New York. There was talk in Washington, D.C. Tommy Toon came out to see us. All these celebrities. Jennifer Holliday from Dreamgirls. Billy Porter, who is a good friend of mine, he had introduced me to
so
Jennifer Holliday.
Talented.
And so just tons of people would come and see us, celebrities from Los Angeles as well as New York celebrities. It was a great time.
It's got a, I know just a little bit of this, but I can't imagine on that level what it's got to feel like to have people that you admire, that you look up to as well, applauding you
and coming in to
see these shows, coming out of their way to come see these shows
too.
Do we need to take a break? I can't imagine.
Well, before we, really quick, before we do go into a break, I had one question.
Sure.
So you were there the entire run of the show, all 5 years of the thing, you stayed on the cast for the whole thing.
Correct.
Okay.
Some people left to do other shows,
right?
But I think it was two or three that stayed on to the very end. Yeah,
and I did want to mention to everyone out there that Ken Ludwig, in a very roundabout way, is responsible for James and I meeting each other.
Yeah,
because he wrote Baskerville, which is the show that we first met when we were first together. That's on stage together. So.
Poor Seth.
So, was the Hounds of Baskerville, or is it Baskerville?
It's just Baskerville. Just Baskerville. So that was, and of course, that's how we end up being here in the end. But that's another story.
Story
so
for another time.
It is for another time.
I'll bring you in.
Because we're talking to Joel Goodness. And we're going to get to the part where I'm excited about, because we're going to talk about Star Trek next.
Yeah. Yes.
So stay tuned for that, everybody, here on Director's Cut.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everybody. Seth and James here with you, and we're talking with our good friend Joel Goodness, having our acting session, and we're going to get into this right away. Actually, I wanted to start the show with it, but just to please Seth, just to take care of my co-host, but we're getting to it now. Along with the many roles that you've done, you leave Broadway, and you get an opportunity to be on one of the more iconic shows of all time, Star Trek. I'm not a...
nicely
well,
done.
Well, not the
sir.
Original. He's not.
No.
That old.
Not that old.
No.
Not
that long.
But just to be a part of, and I know, and because I'm not, I'm showing my hand here. I'm not a Trekkie, but I do know that there not only were a number of different shows under the Star Trek umbrella,
right.
but every one of those shows have a huge fan base.
It sure
and it's, Joel was a part of Star Trek Deep Space Nine on
my
the
favorite
seventh
one,
season.
By the way.
Was it? Oh, was
yeah.
it? I didn't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, that's
oh,
my favorite
cool.
one. Yeah.
So
Chimera.
Yeah, yeah. What was that like, Joel?
Well, it was exciting. I guess I could tell you how I got the
yeah,
role.
Yeah.
I was bartending at Atlas Supper Club, and I was there that night. They had a review show, and the review show was four girls. I want to say four girls, and the director, music director, was the music director for. Let me get this correct. For Jeff Foxworthy's show, the other choreographer was going to be choreographing the Academy Awards. So
wow.
I had no idea where they were. I was talking to the woman at the bar, and she happened to be the wife of one of the guys. And so I told her, you know, I just came in from New York. I'd done Broadway and blah blah blah. And so she actually introduced me to. The music director for Jeff Foxworthy, who then introduced me to Otis Salid, who was the choreographer for the Academy Awards. So that's another story for that another time. Mm. But the Star Trek was a friend of mine, my ex-girlfriend's boyfriend. So he was one of the writers. And so he got me at least into the audition.
Okay.
And that is what this is all about. It's who you know. And sometimes those circles do come around and they do come back. So everybody you meet, you want to make sure that you are nice to them. You are yourself. You're not being a nasty person.
Mm-hmm.
And because you never know who's going to be there the next day. And this has happened to me day in and day out all the time. I have just started talking to people and then they say, hey, let me introduce you to so-and-so. Let me do this and this. And that is where it happens.
Wow.
You can have agents up the wazoo, and you can have managers, but if you are not your personable self and you are being, you know, I guess open to new experiences and new things, you're not going to be there for those times when they do come up.
I talk about this a lot on our shows when it comes to divas and in the world. And it's one thing in acting, and it's one thing to want to do the greatest job, to be great,
right,
and all these things. I think that that's there's nothing wrong with that necessarily.
It's great to achieve
but
that.
When your ego can't fit in the room,
right.
When I think that we've got a number of examples. You look at somebody like a Russell Crowe, a couple of other big name actors that all the talent you could ask for, but director doesn't bring them back. This director doesn't bring, and they get a reputation.
They're difficult.
All of a sudden they can't get movies and straight to video releases.
Correct.
I think when it comes to advice to young actors and stuff, and I want to get into this a little bit more later, part of the reason I thought of you right away, Joel, to kind of kick off this series was, while we've only worked together once, I've heard your name as long as I've been in this town and as long as I've been at WRCT, and it's partially because of your talent. You've got unparalleled talent when it comes to this area. But everybody talks about how great it is to work with you. Everybody talks about how much fun you are during the set, how much fun it is during a run, from your early shows here to things that you've done in the last 5 or 10 years. And I think that stands out just as much as your talent does.
Thank you. That's nice to hear.
People like to work with you. Mm-hmm. And that's not just you. It's so many other actors I can think of, so many other actors that I'm sure you could and Seth could.
Mm-hmm.
I think as much as we encourage people to focus on their talent, to work on their skills and hone their craft, something you touched on there that's so key to this is being good to people you meet and being a good person.
Yep. I want to say there's a famous actress, I don't know if she's still alive or not, she said, you're only as good as your last show. Mm. I want to say maybe it was Barbara Streisand, she's still alive. But you're only as good as your last show. So if you were rude to people, that travels with you. You want to be nice to everybody. The doorman may be, a casting director the next day. All these people are doing other jobs because they're also trying to pursue their career with their life goals, and they are taking maybe the doorman position because they haven't gotten into the casting director's job yet, or whatever the case is. So be nice to everybody, and that way it'll come back to you. Star Trek, so she was a, ex-girlfriend. He was the writer, one of the writers for Star Trek. He got me an audition with the casting director, and I went in and I read, and they said, great. You know, they booked me. Mm-hmm. And that was it. It was a small part. But what was great about Star Trek, because of the fan base, it launched my IMDb page up notches more because now I have a Star Trek credit. Mm-hmm. It's a small part. It was five lines, five words, I should say, not five lines, but that was it. But it was still cool to work with the set and be there. So the whole week we rehearsed it. And how they do these episodes is they have the whole set up the way they're going to film it. And they're in little rooms, little vignettes along the way, and they have a made long pathway where the cameras go up and down, back and forth.
Oh, wow.
And then they go to one set, and they dress it where we all are in costume. Mm-hmm. And then we rehearse it, and then we tape it. And then we go to the next one. And then whoever's in that scene, they dress it, they rehearse it, and then they tape it, and they go to the next one. Some directors will do it differently. Will they rehearse it first, do all
yeah,
of them,
yeah,
and then they'll come back and then dress it, and then they'll tape one after the other. And it's kind of cool that way. We did the same thing with soap operas. They would have the different rooms set up. So each week, it's a different set because we don't know if the cafeteria is going to be there that day, or maybe the bridge is going to be there, or maybe the private room or the security room where I was. So each week, it's a different scenario and lineup of scenes. But they have these scenes. They have these rooms. Basically, they pull them out and they're already set. They just move it to the next in storage, and then they bring in the next one and they put it together. And they have it all set design. They've got people on deck that are continuity directors, where they make sure that person had
everything's
this way,
in
everything's detailed. Make sure, because there's so many people that are following this, that will call it out if it isn't.
Yes. I can't imagine with that, especially that fan base. Yeah.
So you have to do it right the right way and make sure you're consistent with it. And consistency, again, is what's key for this. Is if you have to do it, 16 times, the director's going to say, God, can we get somebody better than that knows it really quick? And then we can move on to the next step.
Right. Yeah, right.
So you're costing less money if you know your lines.
Oh, especially television.
The budget is the biggest thing. Yeah. I don't know. I have only had a little bit of experience with this. But, the budget is on everybody's mind on a set.
And so you have to be there. You have to be ready to go. And, again, if you had a divadom strike where you have somebody that's in the dressing room and it's not going to come out because the M&Ms were all green and she asked for a red, then that person is not that important and can be replaced, and they usually are.
Joel, thank you again. We appreciate this, and get familiar around here because we're bringing you back. So you are coming back sometime.
We haven't talked about the Academy Awards. We haven't talked about all these other things, and that's the great thing. I love talking to actors and all these little side stories and little things
we get
to talk
about.
Oh, I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. We're looking forward to it. Thanks everyone again for listening to Director's Cut. This was a great show. Check it out on civicmedia.us. You can check out the podcast there. And once again, thanks for listening. Bye.